Welcome to the Honeycomb Podcast, the podcast all about New Zealand food and drink and the people that make it happen. I'm Asher Boot, your host and owner of the ramen shop Hillside, Daisies and Bowl. Taking care of all the technical stuff is producer Steve Cochran of Rockwell Productions. In this episode, we spend the morning in Te Horo with Ruth Preddy.
Let's start from the start. Life growing up, you grew up in New Zealand?
Yep, grew up in Wellington. My father had a grocery shop, and from an early age, I liked working.
Yeah.
I did because I got money.
Yeah.
And so, like, from the age of seven, I would go down and help stack the shop, stack the shelves and all that kind of thing. Mm. And he eventually had a supermarket. It was the first supermarket in Wellington, actually.
Really?
Yeah, it was in Parkvale Road in Karori. It was called the Big A. And so I would go there sometimes after school, but always in the holidays, and work. I liked working.
Yeah, pocket money.
Well, I like that, but I have always enjoyed interaction with other people.
Mm.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And what about, what was on the table at home growing up?
Oh, we had really, really good food when I think back about it. Mum was very particular about food because they had been brought up, both of them, in the Depression and had to sort of, like, you know, appreciated what good food was compared to not having too much food. So it was always meat and veg, basically. Like, we'd always have, you know, a favourite, but when I think about it, it was always damn tasty. It was grilled lamb chops, grilled tomato, boiled potatoes, and some sort of greens, and often it might have just been frozen peas.
Yeah.
But actually, done well, it's really nice.
Absolutely.
Yeah, it's really nice, yeah. And then actually, by the time I was probably a teenager, things had got a little bit more sophisticated in New Zealand around food. So Mum started making beef stroganoff and things like that, or fried rice, and that was with the advent of the zip fry pan,
yeah.
You know, plug in. And actually, interestingly enough, you know, people talk about sustainability. Well, of course, everyone was sustainable in those days, wasn't it? Because you couldn't be any other way,
yep.
In a way. There was
Absolutely.
No Glad wrap to buy.
Yeah.
But, you know, she would, once a week, there'd always be a roast. And so when she cooked the roast, she'd also cook a fruit cake and she'd also cook a slice or bake cookies. So that means you're not wasting your oven.
Yeah.
And I can actually remember when we got a fridge.
Mm.
Before we had a fridge, we just used the safe.
Wow, yeah.
It was like a safe that had kind of mesh around it, and it sort of was out to the...
Was it a vented outside sort of one?
Yeah, vented outside one, and should have things there. But actually, it was. I even think now, the only salads we ever really had were this. We always had a salad, usually the night after the roast, we'd have it with the cold meat.
Mm.
And it was always the salad with the decoration on the top of the cheese, the carrot, the tomatoes, the eggs and that. But actually, when you think about it, there was nothing wrong with that salad.
No,
it's a lot better than some salad you get now, isn't
Absolutely.
It? And, of course, the Highlander mayonnaise. But at some stage, she got a wooden salad bowl, but she'd been told that you couldn't wash it.
Oh, right.
Yeah, so she kept it on top of the fridge and she just used to wipe it out, but it started to stink.
Got a bit funky.
And I always think about that now because I've got a lot of wooden salad bowls myself. Yeah, I do wash them.
Yeah. And do you think that connection to food, I mean, you said you're working in a supermarket, but good food at home, is that what led you into cooking professionally?
I always cooked with my mother. I knew how to make gravy and do a roast when, by the time I was 12. I always helped her do things. I always helped her serve up. And actually, it's nice if kids do that because it's actually a really good bonding session with your parents. So I always just cooked with her and I always was familiar with what was going on because first when Dad had the grocery shop as opposed to the supermarket, out the back there were hams hanging up and they would slice the ham on a daily basis or to order and all those things.
Mm.
Yeah, so I think I was like really interested in food.
Yeah.
And funnily enough, I was just saying to someone, I went to Wellington Girls and, of course, in those days, which it probably is still now, I don't even know if it was, but you divided into sections.
Yeah.
So I was in the L1, which was Latin, very handy. And that was the top class. But I became very good friends from the third form onwards with the home science teacher.
Okay.
So at least twice a week I'd go down at morning tea time and we'd have a bit of a yarn And funnily enough, when I was older and I was living in Kilburn, she just lived down the road, so we stayed friends even then. But she would tell me what they'd been doing in the home science class and that kind of thing. But yeah, I did love cooking, and I'd actually, if my parents went away, I would cook for my brother, older brother, or any of those things. Yeah.
And how did you end up in restaurants? Because you had marbles?
Yeah, I had marbles. Well, what happened was I began. So what's at a school, it's probably still the same now, you don't really get told any options. Yep. Or in those days it was like you could either be, you know, a nurse, or you could go to training college or whatever, or if you were sort of like in the top class, they'd say you've got to go to university.
Yep.
So I went to university, and one of my teachers became a tutor, was working at university, and I saw her in the lift and she said, "Oh, how are you enjoying university?" I said, "I'm not enjoying it at all." And she said, "Oh, what subjects have you taken?" And I said, "English, political science and psychology." And she said, "Oh, you've taken totally the wrong subjects. You should be doing something more interesting." And so fortunately, the second year I was there, the drama department at Victoria opened up, because that was another one of my hobbies, was drama. I did it right through college and all that kind of thing. So after 2 years at university of not doing anything, apart from drama, the thing that I really enjoyed, I then decided that I was going to go to drama school too. Yeah. And so I went to the second year of what is now Toi Whakaari. But unfortunately, at the end of the year, we had to have a meeting. It was only 1 year then, and there was only 12 people in the school. And most of them actually are still actors now.
Really?
Yeah, like Peter Hayden, Kathy Downs. There's a lot of them. And it was actually interesting, and I was so upset because the teacher said to me, it was Nola Miller, she was quite famous at the time, she said, "Well, look, it's been great having you here, but I've got not great news for you." She said, "Unfortunately, you're never going to play Lady Macbeth." and then she said, "You could be a comedian, but there's no jobs for women comedians in New Zealand."
Yeah.
Then there wasn't, actually. Yeah. So that was when I sort of kind of went my own way, and I worked in a fashion shop because I had a friend who was working there. It was called Memsab. And the person who owned Memsab was quite theatrical, a lot of fun, was big into food. And that was when I first started to learn about wine and all those things. So okay. I had that influence. And then I had a friend who was working in travel who loved cooking as well. And that's David, who owns Taste in Kandala.
All right,
So he was one of my best friends. And I said, "Well, I think I'm about ready to leave Memsab. You know, I've been there for 3 or 4 years, and what should we do?" And we said, "Well, let's open up a restaurant." Never doing it before. But I tell you what, it was a big hit.
Yeah.
So we were there for about maybe 8 or 9 years. And after 8 or 9 years, we were still really good friends, as we are now. And we just thought, well, we should maybe go our own way. And so that was when we bought up here.
Yeah.
And David actually moved to the Wairarapa, but eventually came back to Kandala. So that was Marbles. So then what could I do? Because, you know, once I left Marbles, people started asking me to cater.
Okay.
They'd say, "Oh, I need something at my house. My husband's got these very special guests coming, da da da." So I just started it by myself, driving in the car. At that stage, I think I was living up here. Yeah, so that's how it all began. And then I had to get someone to help me, and then I had to get in Christmas, the first Christmas I was here catering, I had to get a couple more people to help me because we were doing Colenso parties in the botanical gardens and all sorts of things. So, yeah, it's quite interesting. And along the way, I've met some fantastic people who have worked for us, who have gone on to do other things, and you feel so proud of them.
Yeah. Well, there definitely is. I mean, I've seen it around the world, but there's people in cities that you just see the balloon effect of all the people that have trained with them or worked with them, and they go on to something, and they go on.
Yeah.
And there's just this, it's a family tree almost.
Yeah.
You know, and there are so many people that I've only been in Wellington, like I said, we're well now, 8, 9 years.
Yeah.
But you're someone that your name comes up a lot. via other people?
Yeah, I guess so. We have had a lot of people through our kitchens in one way or the other, and quite early on in the piece, like, we'd only been catering maybe for, and I don't even, did we have this building even? I'm not sure if we did, actually, but we've done lots of overseas gigs. So our first gig was something called Anuga. It was in Germany, and it was like a food fair. It was nations displaying what their food was, basically. Yep. Or if you were a big company, you might just be there displaying yourself.
Yep.
But we did that. I think actually we might have done it three times, actually. It was every 2 years.
Yeah.
It was quite amazing, actually.
It's impressive.
Yeah, I know it was, speaking no German.
So what, segue, what's New Zealand food to you then?
Well, that's a really interesting thing because at the moment our Christmas class is Christmas in Venice, and I've kind of been reading up and thinking about Italian food quite a bit, and really if you said to an Italian, oh, what do you think of Italian, you know, what do you consider Italian food? They probably wouldn't say pasta and pizza, would they?
No, not at all.
So it's a bit like New Zealand. Like years ago, I don't know what, I mean, years ago you would have said, I don't know. So what would you say now about New Zealand food?
I'm glad you brought up Italy just then, because I think that's one of the great examples of a food that's been exported and people try to replicate it elsewhere. And as soon as you replicate it elsewhere, it's not what it is. If you look at Tuscan food or something like that, in particular, Tuscan food is a complete reflection of that region. And that's kind of what I believe New Zealand food is. It's a reflection of the people who are growing food here, the people who are cooking food here, and what grows here.
Yeah.
You know, so trying to define it as a dish, I think, is really difficult.
Yeah.
I hope as we establish longer that we embrace some of these things. Like you're talking about the condensed milk dressing or the spag bol that's been on tables. I think they're just as Kiwi as anything. But our food is what we grow here. It's the taste of New Zealand is our food.
Yeah, I reckon Al Brown's good at that. He's good at keeping the, I don't know if he probably has got condensed milk mayonnaise in his.
I think he did at one point, yeah.
So he is good at keeping those traditions alive. Yeah.
It is interesting, but yeah, I've always looked at, having travelled a bit and seen in other places, yeah, you're exactly right. You ask people what their cuisine is, they'll tell you one thing. Their neighbours will tell you a different one.
Yeah.
And these are traditional food
countries,
I guess.
Yeah.
So I think it's just time and a bit of patience, I guess, with what New Zealand food is. And keep on embracing all the things that come in. You talking about fried rice and the electric fry pan.
Yeah, I know, and everyone does, yeah.
But that's just as much a part of our identity now, I think, anyway, as anything.
Yeah, but times, things change and people go through fads and that kind of thing.
That's it.
Yeah, at the moment a lot of people are buying dry fryers. Is that what they're called?
Air fryers. Yes, I've never used one.
It takes all the fun out of it to take the oil out, doesn't it?
It's just a hot fan oven, isn't it?
I
think that's the idea of it. It's just it's being a fan bake oven, being able to get really hot really quickly in a small...
I never know about that. Yeah, it's weird.
Yeah, we diverged a little bit there. So you've been at Springfield for a fair amount of time now.
Oh, yeah, about 35 years now.
And you gave us a lovely walk around. We sort of saw what's developed over time and all the gardens and things like that. We're going to skip forward. This year, 2020, the changes that you've made with COVID and all sorts of things. I mean, we talked about this a bit earlier without recording. Can you just kind of run us through that evolution?
The evolution was... You know, as soon as March hit, all the bookings we had, and our bookings went actually up to 2022, cancelled. And so what do? We've got all this fabulous, all these great staff members here, but we had to work out what roles we didn't need, and we really had to restructure. And Paul and I made the decision that what we would do, we would restructure, but in order to be able to manage things, we would just keep our activity to things on our own property in Tihoro. So we have a very busy shop now. Our shop's really increased and more people coming than ever before and more online sales and all that. And so we're doing that, but that's just one part of what we do, because we do lots and lots of classes and events that we sell ticketed events here. And then many people come here for their own parties, like anniversaries, birthdays ending in O, just a get-together with friends. So we get a lot of different people here. So that all happens in our house, the parties.
Mm.
And so some there can be some weeks where we might have 4 or 5 gigs a week, and yeah. some of them might be hands-on classes where people come and their party is actually a hands-on class.
Yeah,
which is good.
Do you find the cooking school, the drama background?
Oh, yeah, I couldn't have done it otherwise.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I really believe that, yeah, it's because it's like, well, I think we were talking before about how I think it's great now that people might go into get a skill, like do an apprenticeship and then maybe go to university.
Yep.
But in hindsight, if I hadn't gone to drama school, I wouldn't have been as confident as I am in cooking classes. Like I love doing cooking classes. Yeah.
It is a really, because I see that. I have to do that myself. I'm not a particularly social person. I've been a chef working in basements for many, many years. But when I do have to do front of house, or when I'm doing classes or things like that, being able to put a face on, put a persona on, you know, puff your chest out and shoulders back and think that way, it does help. You can create a persona.
Yeah, you can. So, so I guess, you create a persona. Yeah, I mean, and sometimes our cooking classes, they can go even a bit like you can get through situations just by telling another story that is actually could be nothing to do with the cooking class.
Absolutely.
Yeah,
Oh, that's great. Yeah. And writing?
Well, writing, I don't think I would do, I shouldn't say this, but I don't think I'd do a book again because people don't necessarily buy books these days. A bit of a thing of the past. Yeah.
What about online recipes and things like that? Do you think you're still...
Definitely. People are into online recipes like mad. Like, I have to confess up here, I think I've got probably about 3,000 cookbooks.
Yep.
Probably more. I should do a count.
Steve's seen half of my collection and that takes up a wall, so...
Yeah. So it's like... And I used to buy cookbooks nonstop, but why would I buy cookbooks now when I can go online and get the feel of it all?
We need the Ruth Pretty YouTube channel.
Yeah, probably. Yeah.
Great. I really do think it would be great. Yeah. Do you enjoy that process, though, of writing recipes and thinking about someone else cooking it?
Yeah, I do. And, of course, we have to do that for classes anyway. Mm. So, like, our current class will be the final weekend coming up, but we would have done 13 classes of it, which is Christmas in Venice, which is, like, really popular. But it's not just something you whip up in a minute. It's like anything, isn't it? People never understand how long something takes. Yep. So to do that, I probably worked on it for probably more than 2 months. Obviously not every day, but I was scratching around doing this, testing this, thinking, oh, that doesn't go with that, that's not good enough, people wouldn't like that, and, you know, all those sorts of things.
Yeah.
So, I do like doing all that, yeah.
Oh, that's great. You were inducted into the Restaurant Association Hall of Fame.
But that was years ago now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's special.
I know, it was very, very special, yeah. I'm also a member of, what is it called, MNZ, it's one of those gongs, I've got a medal.
Well done. That's lovely, though. I mean, I guess I appreciate seeing that from people in the hospitality scene especially, because I think we do give so much to communities, and it is such a big part of communities that people like yourself are being recognised and those achievements are
was, though, possibly on account of all the gigs that we did do overseas, because I've cooked in France.
Yeah.
We had a gig in France. It was only small. It was at Veuve Clicquot.
Just a small one. Yes.
Divine. That was years ago. And, Anuga 3 times, I think.
Mm.
And then we have also done America's Cup in Valencia 2 years in a row. It was the, you know, the tryouts and then the real thing. And then we've also done Japan, China. We went to Shanghai. Yeah, so we did 2 expos. So, you know, we have done some good things. And I suppose over the years too, I'm not saying this just to boast, but...
boast away.
Well, actually, I've met a lot of, like, really interesting famous people.
Yeah.
Like royalty. you know, one night we cooked a dinner for, it was about 20 people, including the King and Queen of Spain.
Yeah.
And a lot of times people like that will always ask to speak to the person
yep.
who cooked the dinner because they're used to having people looking after them and they want to thank them.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that's, yeah.
I've been fortunate enough to cook for a few famous people here and yeah, there, which yeah. is great. I'm always impressed with the more famous someone is, yeah. the more humble they seem to be.
Exactly. You've got it. You have got it. I was talking about that today to someone at work, actually, about people who you consider nasty customers. It's kind of their problem.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, because if you are the King of Spain, you'd never be nasty to anyone who was serving you.
No.
Yeah, so we've over the years, our first royal actually was Prince Charles.
Mm-hmm.
He had a conversation with me for
about mutton.
No, it wasn't about mutton. He just had he really likes food.
Yeah,
growing it and all that. This was years ago.
And he's got massive organic gardens that he champions.
Yeah, he wanted to speak to me and we talked for about 30 minutes and he asked me where things came from and he asked me about the farm-raised salmon and all that kind of thing. He was good. Prince Philip, we've cooked for. Prince William, cooked for. Prince William and Princess Kate, we've yeah. cooked for together. So over the years, we've met quite a fine team.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
So after all this boasting.
Yes, all this
boasting. About how much you know
I don't know. How much I don't know, actually. Yeah.
Well, what I was thinking, we're coming up to Christmas
mm.
at the moment. People are planning
yeah.
Christmas dinner and Christmas parties and all those sort of things.
Mm.
Can you give us some tips about how to be ready for a Christmas party?
Well, I think the first thing is keep it simple. And sometimes people forget that because they are very busy scrolling the internet, looking at recipes and thinking about something they might have had at a restaurant, for example. But you don't have to be as crazy as that. Like for our Christmas class this year, we've actually tried to keep it simple. So like we're at Christmas in Venice and we are doing a buffet. We're doing a buffet and I know that's not Italian, but I'm saying to people like, do a buffet if you're going to do a dinner because it's so much easier, especially now with numbers of special diets and people who eat this and don't eat that and I'll just have a little bit of that and all that. So do that. But, you know, like one of the star turns of our Christmas lunch is our T-bone steaks.
Yeah.
It's like all you do need to do is buy it and then cook it.
Yeah.
But I know even that cooking can be... Yeah, and the other thing is too, I spend a lot of time in this Christmas class doing a salad because I love a lovely salad, but you see people leave salad to the last minute when they're cooking. It's just like, oh, I'll do the salad just before I serve it. But then you get this sort of salad that's ordinary and nobody eats it and then you don't want to do it again because it's wasted and all that.
Hasn't had a chance to come together.
It's not like a dish. Yeah, yeah.
I'm guessing just being prepared, everything that can be done in advance.
Well, I tell you a very good hint is twice cooked potatoes.
Yes.
So you need agrias to do it, and there are new season agrias around at the moment. And so we peel them, we might even peel them 2 or 3 days ahead, cover them with water, keep them cold water in the fridge, and then cook them till they're 90% cooked. We'll cut them and cook them, and then we cook for the class. We actually just cook them with olive oil and lots of rosemary and salt, and they're really delicious. And we could do duck fats, it's really good too. One thing though about roasting potatoes, people don't know this often, don't turn them, don't play with them, just leave them in the oven and let them cook.
Yep.
Once you start turning them, you don't get such a crisp potato.
Yep.
And I do like those sorts. I love Jersey bennies, but I think roast potatoes on Christmas Day is the way to go.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah, don't you?
Yeah, roast potatoes, bit of barbecue. I mean, we're so lucky in New Zealand it being in summer though.
Yeah, I know.
Because all the things that you can do that are cold.
Yeah, all the things, And we still have asparagus too, don't we, on Christmas Day now.
Asparagus, sweet corn, strawberries, tomatoes, everything's
kind of,
Everything's all the good things.
I'm starting to feel hungry.
I'm planning a wedding menu for the middle of January for myself, and it's all going to
congratulations.
It's all those things, very simple.
Yeah.
But, you know, new potatoes with mint and butter and sweet corn with a bit of
Well, that's the thing. Because you are a chef, you know that simple's okay.
It's the best.
I know. You see, people get a bit sort of stretched out, don't they?
They do. Very good. Shop is online as well?
Yeah, your shop's very much online, actually. And we get more orders from Auckland than anywhere.
Okay.
And it's always interesting. You think, what has been on TV that everyone wants cannelloni tubes? Yeah, or what's we've had a little bit of a rush on gelatine leaves. There must be something.
Trendy jellies.
Is that what it would be?
There was a real thing around like elaborate jellies.
So it must be that.
Must be.
Yeah, so you can sort of see trends sometimes. Yeah, it's good. No, it's very enjoyable having a shop. I've gone back to my old days, you see.
Yeah.
I love stocking the shelves.
It's very true. Yeah. Fantastic. Have you got anything that you want to add, that you want to talk about?
No, but thank you very much for coming up to see us. We're here in the, not exactly the wilderness, but we're here. And, so people do sometimes say to us, what do you think is going to happen when the new expressway opens up? Well, great, it will be great for us in many ways. Mm. But people come here to our shop that they already know about it. They're not just passing through and seeing it necessarily.
Yeah.
That they know it and they come here, yeah.
Yeah. Well, I highly recommend if you're driving past to call in for a coffee and cake.
Yeah, exactly. And a bit of a shop.
Yeah, a bit of a shop. Drop. And look online for the classes and events.
Yeah. We've got lots of events coming up in the new year. We've already got them online. Some of them are filling up quite quickly too. We've got I think it's the 13th of February, it's the day before Valentine's Day, and we've got a day of Louis Rodier, every version of Louis Rodier matched with courses. It's going to be really nice. Yeah, it will be very, very special. We've got Brett Newell as the MC, in a way, talking about champagne as we go.
That is a Saturday.
Yeah, Saturday the 13th.
Yeah, fantastic.
Yeah.
Valentine's planned. Very good.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for your time and showing us around.
No, thank you. I hope you've enjoyed it.
It's been great.
Yeah, are you ready for something to eat yet?
I'll have something to eat. Yeah, for sure.
Okay, great.
Have a wee cake.
Mm.
Thanks for taking the time to listen to us today. Check out honeycomb.co.nz for information and links relating to this episode. Follow us on Facebook and Instagram. Don't forget to subscribe to this podcast so you'll never miss an episode.